I'm Bob Franklin. Thanks for joining me. This is Like It Is. My guest today on an encore edition of Like It is David Goodchild, a member of the National Hobo Association.
Train that leaves a coast rail yard running high above the blue. There's a last train out, hear some hobos shout. There's a boxcar that's waiting for you. Now you grab your bindle, grab your pail, well, you stand by old rail number 7. And who would have guessed now that you've been blessed to ride the last train bound for heaven?
Music by David Goodchild of Tucson, Arizona, a.k.a. Captain Dingo, the Airborne Hobo. Thank you for being a guest today on Like It Is, Captain.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the time and the format here at this wonderful university. I had a beautiful day walking around, looking at the grounds and talking with the students. Excellent place. Excellent.
You know, we'll listen a little bit more to some music in the latter part of the program, but Captain, when you walked into my office and you told me who you were, I thought maybe you were playing a practical joke on me, but you're not. And I'd like for our audience to know that you are with the National. You may not be with the National Hobo Association. So tell us a little bit more. What is the National Hobo Association? And before our audience starts to draw a conclusion, let's have them hear it from you. What is it?
Well, the National Hobo Association, the NHA, was founded by a movie producer and actor who is known to many people in this country, and his name is Bo Hopkins. He's done a lot of work in movie and television. And what he had done as a young man, he had spent some time riding around the rails as sort of a drifter trying to find his way. And he did a lot of research on the history of the American hobo and the contributions that they have played on building this country, as far as the railroads, as far as laying the roads, doing the agricultural work, especially like during the Depression, laying the foundation for the rich man's home, so to speak. There are a great many things that have been contributed. They were first to answer the call when the country needed their need, when there were soldiers to be needed for wars and things, which is very sad. But the National Hobo Association, what we do is that we have different venues. We have different meetings and gatherings, most of them being a lot of music, a lot of poetry, and many, many people come to see these things, and it's becoming a very big deal around the United States, and we're really welcoming this. We like to keep the spirit of what the contributions of what the American hobo has given the United States of America and given this country since the time of the Civil War.
Now, if some of our listeners not clear in terms of is this hobo association, most people have negative connotations when they hear the word hobo, that people are down on their luck and probably the next thing that they're going to be hearing is someone playing the blues. Is there a stereotype about a person being a hobo, and is that something that you choose willingly or that you just do part-time?
Well, the stereotypes sort of began a long time ago by an artist named Drummond Mansfield, who portrayed the Depression-era hobo as a homeless kind of guy that went from maybe being a wealthy stockbroker, then, of course, Black Friday in October of 1929 when the stock market crashed. He drew pictures of, like, this is what I was before. They show a banker or somebody at a professional status dressed in very nice finery of clothing, then reduced to this, and they showed a guy with a little bundle and a stick over his shoulder with tattered clothes and a half of a cigar chomped in his mouth and his soles of his shoes flapping in the wind. And this is not a hobo. Even during the times of Depression, a hobo, they weren't always homeless. A lot of them had houses, but they just didn't have jobs. So they left their wives and kids at home, and they followed the agricultural routes to try to make what they could. Going almost, a great many of them were starving to death around themselves just by sending what meager wages they had back to their families and their children. And there were many, many, many terrible things. A lot of them went to the Washington, D.C., to the White House, to plead with the president for jobs to open these CCC camps with the WPA to get it started. And the president at that time, the government's response at that time was to send General MacArthur and the National Guard down the railroad camps to chase them out. And a lot of them were beaten with rubber hoses and water cannons, and a lot of women and children were killed. And this is all documented. You can find and read a lot of this in public libraries. And Bo Hopkins, the founder of the National Hobo Association, did a really in-depth study of this and did it quite well. So what we are trying to do as an NHA is to preserve the history and the contributions of what the hobos did for this country, you know, from the time of the Civil War until modern day times. There are a lot of people out there riding rails and riding trains, but that doesn't make you a hobo. A hobo is by the way you live and how you carry yourself and what you do.
Is being a hobo your choice, or do you have another avocation that sustains you, or what keeps you in the present mode that you're in?
Well, I really kind of like this. I used to own a couple of businesses, and make a long story short, in 1987, I had to file bankruptcy. Shortly before that, I owned a bar and a grill and a taxi cab company, and I was teaching three nights a week at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst. And one of my drivers was drinking and ran up the sidewalk and killed two pedestrians. And subsequently, when the insurance paid off, I also was sued for liability, and I lost everything. And that was about the time my children were graduating from high school and going two different places, my son to the Army, my daughter off to college. And I sort of took to the road, and I didn't really even know about this NHA thing until about 4 or 5 years ago. And I had been out there just traveling around the country, working odd jobs, playing my guitar in honky-tonk bars and cafes and street corners, which I still enjoy doing. And I sort of look at myself as a modern-day Woody Guthrie, even though it's hard to emulate because what he had done, it was so profound and so deep, and it was such a first-hand thing that nobody could ever come near that. Although I've got to meet his son. He's a pretty neat fella.
What would distinguish a hobo from a homeless person, or is there a difference?
Well, yes. A true hobo is somebody that travels and works and makes his way by his honest wits, either by craft or, like my case, by music. And some of them, you know, doing odd jobs, day labor, construction jobs for a few weeks. But nobody really wants to do anything really too long. It gets into your blood. I've been doing this now for 11 years, traveling around. And I don't want to sit tight in any one particular place right now. I mean, I don't own a home. Everything that I have, predominantly my belongings, are in a duffel bag, which consists of a sleeping bag, a dome tent, several changes of clothes, some shaving gear, and my guitar. And I ride the freights, and in between guitar gigs, I'll do day labor or paint a house or whatever I can find, you know. And I get a meager small allowance from the United States Army in my disability check every month. I call it my comfort money or my bullet hole money, which isn't a whole lot. But nowadays, it's guys like me are not as prevalent, of course, as what they were in the 30s. In 1933, the Bureau of Census documented that there were over 1.5 million people, including women and children, riding the rails, out of work, out of homes, looking for ways to keep from starving to death, basically. Nowadays, you might have 1,000 people out there riding around the rails, and out of 1,000, there's only a small handful of guys like me that care to take a bath and care to work and care to contribute a little something to the society or to wherever little town we happen to be in. So, that's the difference. A bum doesn't go anywhere, doesn't work. A tramp travels and dreams, and a hobo works and travels. That's the three classifications that the NHA honor.
So you have distinguished yourself from a bum.
Absolutely.
And so you would put yourself above a bum.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And you would distinguish it by your previously given description of
sure
what separates you from a bum.
And the bums aren't allowed into the NHA. You have to. We have a royalty concept. We elect a king and a queen every year at Britt, Iowa, at the National Hobo Convention. It's been going on for 97 years. We have our own cemetery, our own museums. 20,000 people or more come every year in the second week of August to see us at Britt to enjoy our arts and crafts and our music. And this is a big thing catching on. We're in the National Transportation Museum in Roanoke, Virginia. We've been invited to the White House, and we're hobos. And like I said, we're not just part-time recreational riders. Well, you know, actually, I'm out here 8 or 9 months out of the year, and just traveling around, and the freight train is a good vehicle because I don't like riding Greyhound buses.
And is it does it cost you to your mode of travel, the train? Does it cost you to travel from one location to the other location?
Does it cost
me? Does it cost you? Do you have to pay?
Well, it does when I get caught.
It does.
Yes, sir.
What happens when you get caught?
Well, predominantly most parts of the country, riding rails or being on railroad equipment is a misdemeanor of trespassing, and usually the railroad police will tell you to get out of the yard. They'll take your name and they'll check your ID and make sure you don't have warrants or that you're not a criminal. And sometimes they might write you a citation, which can cost anywhere between $85 to $150. Most guys don't pay it, basically because the railroad's not going to pay a lawyer $300 an hour to come down to the courthouse and prosecute you. It's mostly a scare tactic. Their biggest fear is you getting hurt and worrying about lawsuits. There are factions of different gangs out there, like there are in your inner city streets, that are out there breaking in and robbing train cars. They're beating up old guys and stealing their backpacks and their food stamps and things like this. You're always going to have that element also in all walks of life. And that element of dangerous people is also out there on the rails. So you have to be very careful. I've been robbed out there. I've been shot and beaten in the 11 years that I've been out here. But I'll never quit.
Let's talk a little bit about you served in the United States Army?
I certainly did, yes.
In Vietnam. Tell us the difference. Tell us a little bit about your Army background. Then I have a next question.
Well, I don't want to really go in depth too much. Vietnam is a terrible thing, but all wars are a terrible thing. But I served 4 years active duty, 8 years active reserves, United States Army. I spent 31 months, 9 days in Southeast Asia. I was hurt. I came home and raised my children. Mostly as a single parent. I tragically lost my wife in a car accident Christmas Eve of 75. But they called me the airborne hobo because that's what I did. I was airborne special forces in the Army. That was my job.
If you could go back to the life you had before your current life, would you go back to it? And why would you or why wouldn't you?
Well, there's a lot of things that I really wouldn't do. I think when I joined the service coming straight out of high school, I think now as being a little smarter, a little more educated, and a little more callous on the bottom of my feet, I think coming out of high school, I probably would have tried to go right into college or something. Those opportunities were afforded to me as my father was fairly well off, had a few bucks. There was no problem financially for me to go to college. I went in the Army for all the wrong reasons, and I don't really want to get off on that too much because military is one thing. If I was sitting in a VFW club right now talking about the Army is one thing, but I'd like to kind of, that's a bad part of my life. My real heroes never came home, and I just kind of would like to leave that part of the war, if you don't mind, for now. It's a sad part of, but if I had to do it all over again, I would have probably went to college first and then tried to work something out differently from there. But I was young.
When when it gets extremely cold out, and
I head home.
You head home. Home is
Tucson, Arizona.
Tucson, Arizona. Yes. For those unfortunate and not capable of going to a warm climate, what mm-hmm. happens?
Well, a lot of them. Mostly the ones that I know that they are capable of getting there, unless they're crippled or have a disability problem, and for that reason, there are places that have facilities to help them, I'm sure. Some of them just don't, I've met people out there that really just didn't really care, and it's really hard, they've given up on life altogether, but they're not really hobos. They're not really hobos. They're just homeless people maybe that just under a bridge and are froze to death. It's very sad. That's very common in this country. There should be no reason for that, really. This is the best, wealthiest, strongest country in the world. There should be no hungry children, no children without feet, shoes for their feet. There should be no senior citizens or people that need mental medicine, need to be, looked after, maybe in a hospital possibly or some kind of a facility to help them with mental problems or with physical problems. They shouldn't have to be out there freezing to death under a bridge in a snowstorm, say, in downtown Duluth, Minnesota. That's absolutely ridiculous.
What's been the most interesting train ride you've experienced over your tenure traveling the tracks?
Well, besides besides riding with a few fellows and some folks that we shot some footage for a movie that we did. We did a movie that Ernest Borgnine narrates and Merle Haggard's in it and James Michener. We're real proud of that, called Compass in the Blood. We'll get to that probably here in a little bit. Myself personally, one of the most interesting train rides that I've ever been in has been in two derailments that I've actually walked away from. And I thank my good Lord for that. You know, those can be interesting. That's pretty scary. You know, you get the knees to knock, and if I could just write a song around the rhythm of the cartilage in my legs after one of those things, it'd probably be a number one bestseller.
Speaking of writing a song, why don't you take us up a minute or two with a song and tell us a little bit about why you wrote this song, and we'll talk about your movie. Okay. You're listening to the Public Affairs Program Like It Is. I'm Bob Franklin. Here today in the studios of KASU is David Goodchild of Tucson, Arizona, a.k.a. Captain Dingo, the airborne hobo. And we've been having an interesting conversation about, among other things, the National Hobo Association. And so at this point, Captain, take it over.
Well, thank you. I would like to share with you a song that I wrote two summers ago. I was coming from Ogden, Utah, and it started out to be a pretty nice train ride, and it was on its way to Cheyenne, Wyoming. And there was a place out between Cheyenne and Ogden called Sherman Hill, and a terrible thunderstorms were breaking out. Tornadoes were out there skipping around, and hail was banging on top of the boxcar, big golf ball size hail. Scared the dickens out of me. But when it was all well said and done, I started thinking about taking something scary and turning it into something sweet. So I wrote this tune, I penned it to begin as a poem, and then I thought, well, it might make a good song. And I call it the Chili Bone Express, because it was cold, chilly to the bone, and it was my last freight train ride to heaven. And you'll probably understand through this song that the semblance of being a veteran and old soldiers. It was soldiers that actually became the first hobos. They were homeward bound soldiers, and then they used to carry a little rake or something with them. They were working their way back home after the Civil War, and it went from homeward bound soldiers to hoboys to hobos. So in keeping it and giving them the respect for what they are, the veterans and the soldiers that were the first hobos, this is about a veteran's old soldier whose last train ride to heaven. It's called the Chili Bone. Wish I had my harmonicas with me. They got stolen in Jackson on the way up here. As a dual instrumentalist, I'm kind of without half my show here.
Train that leaves a ghost rail yard running high above the blue. It's the last train out here, some hobos shout. A boxcar is waiting for you. Well, now you grab your bindle, grab your pail, and you stand by old rail number 7. Well, who would have guessed now that you've been blessed to ride the last train bound for heaven? I've been riding the steel rail highway, not long home from some war. There were soldiers coming home, now we felt so alone. When America, she slammed the door. You know my feelings unraveling, we began traveling, couldn't stop after our first ride. And these days were hard going from yard to yard, but I kept my own sense of pride. Ooh, Chili Bone. Well, Chili Bone, I can hear your whistle. Well, I see your black smoke rise. Yeah, and guess it's time now to leave this earth and give her its last goodbyes. You see, I've gone rode these rails now for so many years, Lord, and how I feel so proud. Just to be your guest on your Chili Bone Express to your graveyard above your cloud. Ooh, Chili Bone. Every morning I would thank my Lord for the freedom he's gone and shared. For the life of some tramp in a slave wage camp, nothing can be compared. You know, I thank him in the morning for the mulligan runs deep in my mug. And those loving sounds of the engines coming round and the rhythm of a chug-a-lug-tug. You know, I would never waver from days of day labor. I was so proud to finish the task. Well, it would pay for this meal, for my hands never steal and my face never wore a mask. No, mo, 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 no chili bone.
Very interesting song, as performed by my guest.
Thank
David
you.
Goodchild of Tucson, Arizona. I don't know why I keep having problems pronouncing Arizona. A.K.A. Captain Dingo, the Airborne Hobo. He's my guest today on Like It Is. He has been talking with us as he just performed the song. He's been talking with us, among other things, about the National Hobo Association. Before we get to this movie, Captain.
We also have a magazine
as well. Mm-hmm. I'd like to talk about, I mean, here's great marketing, if you want to look at it this way. Mm-hmm. The stereotype of a hobo is very, very negative. Now, you might not agree that it's a good marketing concept in terms of taking something that's negative and turning it into something positive. Would you call it good marketing or what?
Oh, well, I disagree. I really don't think that the majority of people in this country feel that the hobo is a bad guy or a bad person. As I travel all through the Midwest, we do go into small towns and places that I'm lucky enough to maybe perform a little or do some odd jobs. Everybody, especially the elderly people, talk about how wonderful they were. They would come and help bring the crops in, or they would feed them out the back door even if they didn't have any work, and let them sleep in the barn. And they were always perfect gentlemen, ready to pitch in and help. The only ones that I feel, or I have met, that have had negative things to say about a hobo are actually people that have never really met one, other than the fact of stuff that they read. And they're confusing, may I add again, a hobo with probably their local bum in the inner cities that are out there breaking into cars, living in the alleys, staying drunk, you know, and or just people from different walks of life that are homeless. No, there is a big difference, and there is people need to understand that the man that's drunk in your alley, kicking over your trash can, is not necessarily a hobo.
But I guess it would be very difficult if a person has broken into your house. It really doesn't matter whether or not he's a hobo or a homeless person or someone else.
Right.
When you fill out when the police fill out the crime report, the person is whoever or whatever they are in the eyes of a person taking down the information. So,
well, that's what I mean. Sometimes people can't see any further than their nose. You know, the police might tell this person that was a victim of a crime, well, this guy was just some homeless guy staying in a Salvation Army. By the way, I'm sleeping in the Salvation Army. And it's like, just because maybe one or two or three times this might happen in any given city, you know, they should not classify all homeless people as hobos. Because, like I say, and I reiterate, even during the times of the Depression, 60% of your hobos riding the rails had homes. They actually owned a little house or had a property or a cottage or something of substance. I own 3 acres of land in Flagstaff, Arizona. There's no home on it. One of these days, when I get too old to get out here and ramble around like I'm going to be doing, like I like to do.
You'll go back home?
I'll go back and maybe put a little cabin or something up there.
Okay, and we're running short on time. I want to talk just briefly about the movie that we talked about, narrated by Ernest Borgnine, one of my favorite actors, by the way.
Academy Award winner.
Absolutely. McHale's Navy there. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about
Side Ernest. Adventure.
he played Vince Lombardi as well.
Yeah, and Willard with the Rats.
Absolutely. We're going down movie lane. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the movie.
The movie is great. It's a 58-minute documentary short. It's produced and directed by Bo Hopkins, like we had talked about, another known actor and producer. Buzz Potter, Ed C. Potter, he's from Minnesota. He's the editor of our magazine. He got involved with this project, as well as a man named Wallace Benepe, who was another co-producer. The movie is a 58-minute documentary. It covers a broader range of what we're discussing here. of the American hobo and his contributions, his and her both contributions to society. They built the TVA dams. They just did everything, laying the rails out through the railroads, merchant seamen, merchant marines. It's a great movie. Merle Haggard, who was a hobo, sings some songs in there, and James Michener, a very prolific and well-known writer, they interviewed him in his house in Austin, Texas, before he just recently passed away. They started filming this 2 years ago, and there was a lot of on-location sites being filmed at our Poetry and Music Fest that we have in Britt, Iowa, and it's a very, very fine documentary. It really tells the real truth. And it's easy enough to get by, you know, to get a hold of through our National Hobo Association. And we have this address and website number and things available for anybody in the public that would like it through this station. They can get it.
We certainly will give all that information at the tail end of the program on our disclaimer. Great. But I want to thank you, David Goodchild of Tucson, Arizona.
Captain Dingo is fine.
A.K.A. Captain Dingo.
The Great Grand Duke of Hobos.
The Airborne Hobo. And I would just say, I'm sure that if the homeless had an articulate spokesman as yourself for them, I'm sure they would certainly make some of the same points that you made about the hobo. I want to just have you just right underneath my voice here do a nice little musical segue as we move toward the end of today's program. I want to thank you for being a guest today, and tell us what you're going to take us out on.
This is a little thing I wrote about dumpster diving. Once in a while, you know, might have to get a little something out of there about dumpster diving with cats. And this is all about dumpster diving with cats, you know.
I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week.
You put your lobsters deep in the trash.
With another edition of Like It Is.
Eat your pheasant while it's under glass. Get into your garbage. I have no cash. A little dinner, I'll be gone in a flash. Won't you hold the pickles? Oh, that lettuce. Special orders don't upset us. Just as long as they would let us dive it our way. We're gonna go dumpster diving. I'm surviving. My kitty cats are thriving today. You just open the lid, have a little look. It's all prepared, there's no need to cook. We're going dumpster diving, whoa, whoa, hooray.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.